The most merciful thing in the world is the inability of the human mind to correlate all its contents. These haunting words open H.P. Lovecraft's most renowned tale, immediately establishing the philosophical cornerstone of cosmic horror. What if our sanity depends on not seeing the full picture? What if the universe harbors ancient, incomprehensible entities that regard humanity with the same indifference we might show an ant colony? This is the terrifying premise that unfolds in The Call of Cthulhu, where reality itself becomes suspect and knowledge becomes a pathway not to enlightenment, but to madness. Through a masterfully fragmented narrative, we piece together scattered evidence of something ancient stirring from its slumber, something that existed eons before humanity and will persist long after we're gone. The story's brilliance lies in its structure, a nested narrative, where the protagonist, Francis Wayland Thurston, investigates his deceased great-uncle's research. This academic detective work uncovers three interconnected threads: an artist plagued by strange dreams who sculpts a bizarre idol, reports of worldwide cult activity featuring ritual human sacrifice, and a harrowing first-hand account from Norwegian sailors who accidentally encounter something ancient and horrific in the South Pacific. What makes this approach so effective? Rather than confronting the horror directly, we experience it through layers of documentation, hearsay, and fragmented evidence, mirroring how humans might actually piece together incomprehensible cosmic truths. The horror builds gradually as connections emerge between seemingly unrelated incidents spanning continents and cultures. Dreams disturb artists and sensitive minds worldwide simultaneously. Cultists in remote regions perform identical rituals despite no communication between them. Something is influencing human consciousness on a global scale. When sailors discover the sunken city of Ar-Liyeh, risen from the Pacific depths, Lovecraft creates one of literature's most disorienting settings. The city's non-Euclidean geometry defies normal physical laws. Acute angles are actually obtuse, flat surfaces are subtly curved, and seemingly solid structures shift when viewed differently. Imagine walking through a building where staircases lead simultaneously up and down, and doorways connect to rooms that shouldn't physically exist in that space. This architectural impossibility creates profound psychological horror, violating not just safety, but reality's fundamental rules. When sailor Gustav Johansson describes the cosmic angles of the city as all wrong, he's expressing something deeper than aesthetic distaste. Rye's geometry suggests a universe operating on principles fundamentally alien to human comprehension. This concept has influenced everything from the reality-bending corridors in Nolan's Inception to the impossible architecture of games like Control. When spaces don't quite make sense, we experience a shadow of the cosmic dread Lovecraft pioneered. Among Lovecraft's most enduring creations is the concept of worldwide cults preserving forbidden knowledge across millennia. The Cthulhu cult spans continents and cultures, connecting Louisiana voodoo practitioners with mongrel immigrants in New York and degenerate tribes in remote jungles. Their chant, Funglum Glamonglanoff Cthulhu Rilye Ranaglif Tan, in his house at Rilye, dead Cthulhu waits dreaming, has become iconic in horror literature. These cultists aren't simply evil in a conventional sense. They believe that when the stars are right and Cthulhu awakens, they'll be rewarded with freedom from moral constraints and physical limitations. That cult would never die till the stars came right again, and the secret priests would take great Cthulhu from his tomb to revive his subjects and resume his rule of Earth. This represents a terrifying inversion of religious promise, not salvation through moral behavior, but liberation through abandoning humanity itself. The cultists worship something beyond human moral categories entirely, and their willingness to surrender humanity for cosmic power suggests that part of us might welcome the dissolution of the self into something vaster and more primal. When Cthulhu finally appears, Lovecraft confronts his greatest challenge: describing something beyond human comprehension. His solution creates one of literature's most memorable monsters through deliberate contradiction. A monster of vaguely anthropoid outline, but with an octopus-like head whose face was a mass of feelers, a scaly, rubbery-looking body, prodigious claws on hind and forefeet, and long, narrow wings behind. This layering of incompatible features creates something impossible to visualize completely. The entity exists in an uncanny valley, recognizable enough to trigger revulsion, yet alien enough to defy categorization. When Johansson rams his ship into the creature, it doesn't bleed, but temporarily dissolves into a gelatinous green immensity before immediately reforming. The true horror isn't just Cthulhu's appearance, but what it represents. An entity so ancient that humanity's existence is but a momentary flicker in its perception. The sailors haven't defeated it, but merely delayed its awakening. The stars will eventually align again, and Cthulhu will rise. Our victories against cosmic horror are always temporary. Throughout the narrative, those who glimpse the truth face devastating consequences. The artist Henry Wilcox experiences fever dreams that leave him physically and mentally exhausted. Professor Angel dies mysteriously after investigating the cult. The sailors who encounter Cthulhu either die immediately or, like Johansson, waste away from psychological trauma after their escape. This pattern establishes Lovecraft's central warning: some knowledge is too terrible for human minds to bear. Each investigator follows the same tragic arc. Curiosity leads to discovery, discovery leads to understanding, and understanding leads to madness or death. Yet we as readers continue the investigation alongside Thurston, unable to resist the pull of forbidden knowledge despite witnessing its consequences. The story's final paragraph delivers its most chilling thought. Now that Thurston knows the truth, he fears he'll be the cult's next target. I know too much, and the cult still lives. Knowledge itself becomes a death sentence. Yet more disturbing is his realization that humanity's continued existence depends entirely on cosmic chance, that Cthulhu remains imprisoned only because the stars are not yet right. Why does this century-old story continue to terrify modern readers? Perhaps because Lovecraft tapped into anxieties that have only intensified with time. As science reveals an ever vaster universe, with humans occupying an increasingly marginal position, Lovecraft's vision of cosmic indifference feels prophetic rather than dated. When astronomers discover black holes that could swallow our solar system, when physicists propose countless multiverses, when biologists remind us that humans occupy a tiny branch on life's evolutionary tree, they echo Lovecraft's fundamental insight: the universe is vaster, stranger, and more indifferent to our existence than we can comfortably comprehend. The Call of Cthulhu uniquely disturbs by rejecting traditional horror's moral framework. There's no evil to defeat, just the terrifying suggestion that reality itself is fundamentally alien to human understanding. The true horror isn't that monsters exist, but that the universe never belonged to us. This is why we still shudder at Cthulhu's shadow a century later. Not because we fear tentacled monsters, but because we fear insignificance in an indifferent cosmos. When we contemplate the vastness of space or the depths of geological time, we feel what Lovecraft described, the vertigo of cosmic insignificance. Perhaps the most terrifying aspect of Lovecraft's vision is not how alien it feels, but how true.